Hey folks, before we get started with today's episode, we just wanted to give a special thanks to our patrons over at patreon.com/Connor's Basement, those folks who support us with their generous donations. We'd like to thank Julia, Eric, Goldie, Matt, and Chris's mom. All right, hey, welcome. Welcome back. It's been a minute, but it's good to be back here in the basement. Unlike normal, when we shake off the cobwebs, we're putting the cobwebs back where they belong. We're very eco-friendly down here in the basement. We want to leave things as untouched as humanly possible. But I wanted to ask Chris a question. I wanna maybe dig into maybe some spicy, problematic opinions
Sorry,
getting ahead of myself.
Okay.
I was on a walk before, and I was thinking, what would be your, like, maybe unpopular opinion or desire from Bright Eyes or Connor Oberst? And to give you an example, my own maybe spicy hot take is, if I could wave a magic wand and make Bright Eyes do something, I would say full re-releases of albums, but all radio edits. Like interstitials, little story stuff, just taken out, and just pure songs, pure instrumental. I would kind of dig that. I would love to be able to just like have my music player shuffle, and then not have to like skip over like the end of a song, and use that as a way to convince people in the car, like, yeah, you should listen to this, and then not explain, wait, why is this guy at the end of the song talking about pomegranates? That was a banger of a song until the weird guy came in and talked about pomegranates.
Okay. So I agree and I disagree. I disagree because I love that he talks about pomegranates. I could definitely see like playing it for someone. I was in the car with my girlfriend. I was showing her Down in the Weeds. And having to kind of like explain through the intro was a little like interesting, you know, because that was mostly her first time like hearing some Bright Eyes and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think I could definitely see where that could come in. So like, hey, let me show you like just like a random collection of their songs written from, you know, 1995 to 1998, of course. Now, we skipped that album. But, you know, like, versus like, oh, yeah, you know, they put these things in there. Connor has said that they do that specifically to ward off casual listeners or to make them understand that this isn't going to be like the typical album experience, things like that. So I could definitely see, like, when you're trying to show it to someone, wanting to just like, here's the music, here are those hits, you know, things like that. So, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but the diehard in me wants to say that is blasphemy.
you firmly stay at your position in front of the gate. You will remain the gatekeeper.
Yes. And, you know, blasphemy, I feel like, is almost a vague theme of what we might be talking about today and next episode.
there may be some hints of paganism going on here.
Some blasphemous ideas from Connor himself. So we're going to be talking about the Four Winds EP today. And then, of course, that means next episode we'll be talking through Casadega as well. You know, I say blasphemy as a theme. Although that's come up multiple times already on many albums, but this album is so closely tied to the ideas of religion that this and the People's Key, I feel like you really can't escape the religious talk or like the talk of something outside of oneself, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely see how there's a bridge between like what we'll get to in People's Key from where we were in Wide Awake, where there is this idea of maybe a larger world going on as far as like Connor's time across different states and different cities. But then also going back to, you know, the more ethereal stuff, the more spiritual. And we know that he's had through the lyrics, he's had definitely some friction with the spiritual and the religious and different, like, especially in this EP, the life of the traveling musician rubs up against, you know, where, you know, somebody belongs, and that kind of spirals into the bigger, like, where anybody belongs and on our spinning little marble in the universe.
Like you said, this is kind of like a bridge. I guess specifically, let's say I'm Wide Awake, It's Morning. We did kind of mention there were some of those kind of the back and forth, that struggle between, like, where am I? Where do I live? Is it Omaha? Is it New York City? Am I just a child of the road? You know, something like that. And we get some of those cuts on here. But then also you do have some of that transition to this kind of, like, otherworldly. I'm thinking, obviously, like, Four Winds, the titular track. And then also, like, Cartoon Blues as well, kind of delves into this weird psycho trip, I guess you could say. Yeah. Not to get too ahead of ourselves, but, like, you definitely have, like, a blend, I guess, between those things, and kind of a good bridge between where we were and where we'll end up with Casadega, where it kind of feels like a more natural progression, I guess.
Yeah, well, why don't we jump in? It's kind of funny. I was listening to this because I'm in some regards kind of stubborn when it comes to how I listen to music. And as much as I appreciate Spotify and those other kind of services, I very much appreciate having a, like, device or something that has, like, whether it's listening to the vinyl or having the files on an MP3 player. There's just something nice about being able to listen without needing the internet, you know? But I had only realized when I went to, like, take notes and look at the, you know, the lyrics online, that I had been listening to a weird EP where I think something happened where I had the songs alphabetized. So I wasn't even listening to them in the right order. I don't typically look at LPs the way that that I look at EPs. Like, LPs usually have the, like, I will definitely see why songs are in certain orders on an LP. Whereas an EP feels more like maybe another hot take, maybe another a bad hot take at that. But you could kind of shuffle an EP and not lose too much. And I'm curious, like, did you ever think that there was an order to these? Like, do you think that there's a reason why, other than it being the titular, song, why we begin with Four Winds as opposed to any of the others?
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, that's what EPs were used for. It was, here's our single from an album, and then here are some songs that were kind of, like, related, left on the cutting room floor, like, things like that. So, like, things that around it that are not going to end up on your album, you'll usually have, like, your main single or something like that along with others. So that's, like, why we've gone through and we've seen Take It Easy, Love Nothing, or Lua on, like, the EPs and things like that we've discussed. So in that sense, I don't think that generally, you know, you need to listen to EPs as, like, one thing. But I do think that's changed a little bit. Maybe not with Bright Eyes specifically, but just in general. I feel like EP has just become, like, short album. You know what I mean? Like, it's just become, like, well, I don't have enough songs to release, you know, a 12-track album, so I'm going to call this an EP. And it's five really tight songs that are meant to be a story. But in terms of this, I don't think that you necessarily need to listen in a specific order. On the actual vinyl, on the backside, it says Bright Eyes, Four Winds in quotes. So, like, kind of like quoting, like, the title of the EP and as well as, like, the song. And it says with supplementary material, with a clear divider between Four Winds and the remaining five tracks of the EP. So this is, I guess, really meant to show that, you know, this is Four Winds with this additional material on it.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense, because I also think that the not only do these songs, most of them, I don't know, and maybe you can disagree with me here, but I feel like most of the songs, while I get the vibe that they're going for, they feel a lot different than what we'll get to with Casadega. And I don't know, maybe that's just because I am a little, like, maybe biased towards Casadega, and I like, I love that album and I like how it is, so I can't maybe imagine like a different version of that album. But I do feel like some of the songs that will, and we'll get to this, I'm sure we'll point out things on this topic, but some of them do feel like you've got that same vibe, but I couldn't think of putting these songs, like, where I couldn't even imagine where I could put these songs apart from Four Winds.
Yeah, and you know, not to like belabor this point too, but I was thinking along similar lines. I'll mention it for like some specific songs. But when you think about like the time when this was coming out, like this was 2007, Connor's self-titled was not far behind this. And some of these songs give me vibes of where he would go with like Mystic Valley Band or like some of his solo work.
Yeah.
So I wonder if like some of these maybe would have ended up that way. And he's like, oh, you know, I've got some of these songs I'm going to throw in there. I don't know, something like that. But you can definitely hear stylistically, I guess, some of the stuff that would kind of lean in more towards his work as quote unquote Connor Oberst. But I do think I specifically like, you know, I'll save it. I'll save it for the songs. But there are some things where I hear it, I'm like, huh, that this reminds me of maybe where this could fit in Casadega. Or like, you know, Four Winds, obviously. It reminds me a lot of a song on Casadega. Oh, it's literally the same name. It's called Four Winds. I don't know. They just released two of them, I guess.
Yeah, they believe it or not, it's not the exact same song. They've recorded it twice. You'll notice some subtle differences.
See, this is the hard-hitting journalism you'll only get on this podcast. If you see here, you know, he says your cast slightly different. There's like a harder T to it.
Yeah, you really do have to open up the song in Audacity and like really zoom into those waves for you to see the real difference.
Well, look at this peak. Look at this peak. I mean, you could actually argue, and we should jump off this point immediately, but you could actually argue with the fact that there's a remastered version of Casadega. Like, it is kind of a different song now.
Yeah, I guess you could.
Oh, God.
I really just imagine like an image of us like in lab coats and goggles, like holding up a beaker, and it's like, yes, the wavelength is shorter on the remastered version.
I've run it through the mass spectrometer. Is that the thing that spins? What was that thing called? Do you know what I mean? Like
it spins to separate. Like,
yeah, what was that called?
I believe that's a centrifuge.
Oh, you're so smart.
I paid attention in 10th grade science. Then?
This is what our audience came to listen to. Oh,
yeah, of course. I remember now. It's an analytical tool useful for measuring the mass to charge ratio, everyone knows as M over Z, of one or more molecules present in a sample. You know, it's, of course. How could I forget?
It's You know, I just slipped your mind. You know, every once in a while, like, I'll wake up some days and be like, oh, man, I forgot how to tie my shoes, you know? Like, it's the simple stuff like that that you just forget sometimes, you know?
I feel like I must have heard that in, like, an episode of Dexter's Lab and just, like, never forgot it, you know?
Yeah, like Jimmy Neutron or something, and it just, like, exactly. Stuck in your brain.
Dee Dee, we're going to go to the mass spectrometer. And oh, God. All right. So, Four Winds, huh? I mean, there's not too much to say really about this album. It does come out in the same year as Casadega, but, you know, I mean, obviously at different times. T- So 2007. And I mean, that's really most of the information in the vinyl insert. I do want to call to attention, though. There are a couple of typos. I'm not going to point them out, but I just find that funny.
on the insert.
On the insert. Yeah. Like, I'd have to like find them again. But when I was reading through the lyrics, I was like, nope, that's a typo. Or like, you know how he says in Four Winds, like, there's people always dying trying to keep them alive. And yeah. Like, technically that's not proper, because like, there are people always dying trying to keep them alive. But, you know, colloquially we say theirs. But they decided not to use the apostrophe in the lyrical, like, lyrics. So it says, there is people always dying trying to keep them alive. There is bodies decomposing in containers tonight in an abandoned building, et cetera, et cetera. But then later they use contractions. So, like, why did you specifically separate out these words, but not, you know, but why is it it's instead of it is? Unless it is supposed to be something like singular. You know, there is always people dying, trying to keep alive or something like that. I don't know.
What I think happened was that somebody from like the printing company was like, hey, can we get the lyrics so that we can like put them on the back here? And then Connor just mailed them like the napkins that he wrote the lyrics on. And they're like, oh, I don't know what to make of this. So I guess we just copy it down.
Well, you know, what the funny thing is as I was looking through it, I was like, there's a hidden meaning here. And then, yeah, and that's like, this is like my brain just like completely poisoned with like trying to find all the subtleties. There's also a, what's it called? So Sherry Dupree she's from Isley. Her and I believe one of her sisters are background vocalists on this as well as in Casadega. Mm-hmm. And they spell Sherry's name wrong. They spelled it Sherry with a Y, but it's Sherry with an I. So I found that funny too.
What I find really interesting too is that the only thing that I really know, because you're the expert when it comes to like the historical stuff behind like the albums and the releases, but I do remember reading about how, like, if those of you who are Googling along and looking at the Four Winds EP cover, you'll notice that it looks almost like some sort of cipher or like some code or something. And there was some puzzle in this. And if you like were able to dismantle the puzzle, you would get like some messages. And one of them, I think, was like saying like, we love you, Breezy, in reference to, I don't know if we want to go into this right now.
Well, I think that's on Casadega, right?
Was it? I thought it was this one.
No, so I know on Casadega it comes with like the decoder thing that you hover over the thing. I know for a fact it says like, we love you, Breezy, and miss you, or something like that, along with like all the other cryptic weird stuff on there. But yeah.
Oh, okay. I was mistaken then. I guess I'm dare just, you. I know. I'm a garbage human being.
I know on Wikipedia, though, like some of these like things apparently like translate to like Hebrew and, you know, mean certain things.
Mm.
OK, so like we've done with other EPs, we are going to skip over Four Winds. I mean, I think both of us kind of wish we could talk about it now.
Yeah.
But I'm appreciative that I at least get some more time to like really formulate my thoughts on it. Especially with like everything going on in Casadega, I would hate to remove this from the context of the album and then like have some thoughts on it that later kind of like, I don't know, get blown up or maybe don't fit or something like that. But I guess like one thing I'll say about it, and this kind of, because this kind of fits maybe with like history more so than like specific of the song, I do think it became synonymous with Bright Eyes, like in a very good way, kind of like, not just like melodrama, not just like first day of my life kind of sweet saccharine kind of thing, but like something that kind of really highlights the talent of the band, because it is kind of like a well-written song, both in terms of like the production, the lyricism, and like the actual like composition by Nate as well. Like, you know, this song is a marvel, and it's great that this got some positive like airtime or like publicity Whereas, you know, First Day of My Life felt a little more one dimension in terms of Bright Eyes. This kind of expands, I guess, a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree. I think that while I'll never complain about like somebody like Connor having more, and a band like Bright Eyes having more exposure to a wider audience. Yeah, you say it perfectly. Like, it does feel very much like First Day of My Life was just sort of, you know, I think liked more for the fact that you could really put it on a Valentine's Day mixtape and it would be perfect. And it definitely has a I don't mean this as an insult, but it like, I kind of get like a Death Cab for Cutie vibe from First Day of My Life, just for the sake of like, I would put that on the shelf with like, I Will Follow You Into the Dark, like that level of love song. You put it perfectly. I think this is this is the start of showing their real, I don't know. I feel like Casadega, when we talk about it, I just love the sound of it. And I feel like it's Bright Eyes really hitting their stride. Mm-hmm. And this is just a good little glimpse into like how instrumentally rich and interesting it is to listen to. And yeah, just a little while longer. We just need to wait a little while longer before we can start talking about the orchestra.
Oh yeah. Right. So then I guess we can get into Reinvent the Wheel, and I'll let you open on this one.
Yeah, sure. So I really like this song, and I think one of my fixations on the song was my curiosity of who Connor is talking about. Mm. And for a very long time, I always assumed that it was one of those kind of songs where he's singing about himself.
Okay.
Because, and I'm sure you might want to bring up, you know, if you have any other background information about this, but it kind of sounded to me like that line, I forget what song it's from, but it's like, if I could talk to myself like going for gold, that's it. Going for gold. If I could talk to myself like I was someone else, maybe I wouldn't act like such an asshole all the time. So maybe he, in that interpretation of the song, you know, my friend, you were the model, a priceless work of art. Like boys kind of co-opting the songs to like, I don't know, impress people, and then girls swooning over it in a like very stereotypical fashion. Mm-hmm. And just sort of like that detachment. Like if you've ever seen him at his most uncomfortable in like interviews or on stage or something, he does get that vibe of like sort of like almost like distancing himself from the whole situation. He gets very weird if he's not comfortable, from what I've mm-hmm. noticed from Connor Oberst. So yeah, I could definitely, I get the vibe that maybe this is like a little bit of self-criticism. Like, you'll never understand what people like about you because you like X, Y, and Z. And you know, I think I can speak for both of us when it comes to like self-criticism, we're our own worst nightmares. So maybe this is like his way of dealing with some selfs like criticism, but I have a feeling like there might be more to this story than just my interpretation.
Yeah, I mean, people were convinced that it's about Elliot Smith. I can't argue that. You know, I don't have any like knowledge to say, no, this definitely isn't, or, you know, this definitely is. I can understand where people are coming from. I mean, as far as I know, and, you know, it's not like I know the guy personally or anything like that. They're both from Omaha. I don't know if there was any like crossover, but I don't have any knowledge of them being like close friends and or something like that. So like, I don't know, what the fuck do I know? but like, this reads to me more like a song to a close friend. And with Connor having so many friends that are musicians, that he talks about with like tragic stories about friends that he's lost over time, things like that. I don't want to get tripped up in saying like, nope, this is 100% it's the one guy that everybody knows. It's Elliot Smith. You know, this could be any number of people. So like, I'm thinking of it more in like a general term, and it could be about multiple people as well, which is kind of sad when you think about it, that, you know, he's probably has quite a few a few close friends that this could apply to. But I overall, though, with the song, I kind of get it. It's like a boppier version of like Laura Lawrence kind of thing. Like, you know, beautiful ways of describing the like intrinsic or, you know, or whatever, like beauty of someone, someone that he cares about, and kind of like wishing that they could see themselves, you know, they could see in themselves what he sees in them. But I think what I appreciate most about this is the ability to write kind of a tragic song about someone that I'm guessing died, and not really make it melancholy, kind of make it more of like the celebration of like, thank you for having been, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think to kind of also circle back a little bit to First Day of My Life, where like you would imagine a love song to be like super soppy and not really even touch upon negative things, but it was a very realistic song of like that beautiful line, I'd rather be working for a paycheck than waiting to win the lottery. But he does that here. There were many talents you possessed that I wish myself to have, but the way your eyes would gloss over, I never envied that. So it's not like a song honoring someone who passed that is going to be doing, that, you know, doesn't acknowledge that a person might have faults.
Right.
It absolutely like it's a realistic, I don't know, like a survey of somebody's life about how like, yeah, this was somebody who inspired me and who I looked up to, but you yeah. also were kind of showed that you were bored sometimes, and you know, you weren't perfect, but you were a hero.
Yeah, no, for sure. I know that's a good point. He has his way of just. I wish Connor would write a song about me, even if he was trashing me. I feel like he would just do it in such an eloquent way.
He would. He would bring up that time where he depended on you to like do backup vocals and play guitar, and you froze. Yeah, deer in the headlights, and you got booed off stage, and you know what, one day that the new EP is gonna come out, and it's gonna there's gonna be a song that's referencing that horrible fateful day,
or you know, the fact that we always use him to pimp out our Patreon, because we all know that he is a patron of ours, and so all of you should be too. The last thing I'll say about this song is that the sound and structure, like kind of going back to what we were talking before, kind of remind me of People's Key, actually. Like if like Mystic Valley Band did People's Key, I feel like this song would be on it, where like, you know, you strip away the clearly like electronic vibe of it, but like this, like structurally and like sonically, I guess, give me some like triple spiral kind of vibes.
I get that. Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, but that's all I really had for this.
Yeah, same. I think those were my thoughts as well.
Do you smell something?
No, I don't. Should I be worried about that?
I think I see smoke. We should go check. Honestly, we should. Wait, maybe we should be quiet. I think I hear someone.
Do you think they're hotboxing the upstairs?
All right. So I guess, yeah, let's move on. Smoke smoke without fire. I kind of want you to start.
Yeah? All right. So, okay. Here's a weird thought that I had, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like there's an abnormal amount of references to sex workers throughout Conor Oberst's lyrics.
Oh, I agree. I was thinking the same thing.
I don't think it comes from any like necessarily mean place. It's just strange to me how often it comes up, considering the subject matter. I don't know what to make of it. It's just strange to me, and it's obviously the lines that make me think this. These fears of yours like painted whores will not stay the night.
Yeah,
and it's just like, I don't understand what I'm supposed to feel when you're evoking these things. And again, it doesn't seem like it's coming from a necessarily mean place. It just seems like oddly out of place.
I feel like it's maybe one of those things. He must just like it I don't want to say as a symbol, because like a symbol of what, or like,
okay. So I was actually thinking along those same lines of like, there is this weird, not to like get preachy or anything, but like, it seems like there is an odd fixation in art with the sex worker. As far as like, there are a lot of painters whose models were just hired prostitutes to pose while they painted. There is a lot of overlap between like sex and art, and especially when it's trendy art. And I guess there is maybe this sort of mystique to sex, but with that extra layer of like, this is an illegal and like morally dubious thing, which weirdly makes it more interesting to think about. And yeah, I don't necessarily know if it's a symbol, but it's definitely becoming a motif at this point of just like a decoration in these lyrics.
I was going to say, like, I guess it like, it brings to life some, you know, it personifies, I guess, like it turns this like metaphor into something like living and like visceral. And that's the only, like when I'm reading through it, it's like, it is jarring, but I think intentionally jarring. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I don't know if he's using this specifically as like, I want to liken these fears to quote unquote painted whores, but more so like, when you hear this, I want your ears to perk up, kind of thing. I don't know. Like, it is a very like visceral line.
Yeah, and I'm curious why there's like you're putting your finger on the thing that I'm having trouble with this line. And it's funny because there's so much else we could be talking about right now, but this like really sticks in my craw. Like, why make a comparison between fears and a sex worker? Like, I kind of get the weird clever pun of like, you know, your fears are temporary, like a person you pay to have sex with. But it's a weird, very muddied metaphor. Well, simile in this case, but you get what I'm saying.
So I don't know why it took me this long to remember what I had written down.
sure.
So my overall reading of the song was like, the overall sense I got was that it felt like very banal advice that you would give to someone that's going through a hard time. Mm-hmm. So like, so in this first verse, I get this kind of like, just come out, bro, just party with us. You just need to get laid and like, it'll be fine. You know, like, I hear this as advice that he's heard from other people. Like, come in, you're welcome here. It's all going to be fine. As soon, you know, if you just come out, you get a little tipsy, you sleep with someone, like, you're going to be feeling fine by the morning. Your life is going to be fine. And in that second half, I guess, of this verse, you know, and it says, come along as your timid tongue, too shy to tell a story, and ends with, so I won't condone another moan, not when everything is fine, which again, sounds like another kind of like, no, don't worry about it, man. Like, everything's good. You're fine. No, don't worry about it. You're fine. You know, like, so I don't know if I'm kind of nearing some truth, some accuracy, at least the way that I'm reading it, like, maybe it's that kind of connection.
Yeah. I one thing that I took away from the song was that it feels like the core advice being given is fake it till you make it. Is what I interpreted this as. Like,
yeah.
And that kind of fits with what you're saying of like, you know, this show of bravado and not, you know, oh yeah,
we're gonna get laid. We're gonna have fun. You're gonna tell us all your wild stories, and you're not gonna complain because that would drag down the mood. So you should fake it until you actually become that person who tells these stories, who is loose and wild with women and XYZ. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in Drought, learn to dance. A wolf in no one's clothing. Like, and it was a brilliant disguise. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of things that read to me here of like deception with good intent, or at least like, yeah, just fake it till you make it. If you don't feel good, if you feel timid, not confident, just keep pretending like that's the case. But then it does end on that interesting thing of like, brother, be afraid of the flames. Like, he, you know, dream of smoke without fire. But when it burns, maybe you have something to worry about. Like, don't get too deep in the act, maybe.
Yeah, I so I guess my, like, continuing on with my idea of it, and kind of the way I read it. Let me go back to the chorus first, though. Like, I think the chorus could be Connor reflecting on the flaws of that plan, maybe, though. Rather than, like, specifically just talking about, like, that fake it till you make it. Just, this is just the way that I read it, and it doesn't contradict what you're saying.
Right.
But just, like, you know, pretending there's smoke doesn't create the fire. And dancing in the dry desert is not what causes rain. And your prayers will never, you know, won't bring back the dead. It's fruitless, those endeavors. So, like, just trying to fake it till you make it, I guess my reading was, like, it doesn't work. Like, I'm still going to feel the same way. But then kind of what you're saying towards the end with the, you know, I ain't afraid of the flame, brother, be afraid of the flame. My reading of it was that when he says that he's laid in there, I think what he's saying is that he's tried putting in the work before. He's tried not faking it. He's tried doing what it is that is quote unquote correct to do to make it. But ultimately, it ends up the same. There's no result. There is no smoke, despite the fire. So kind of maybe like the opposite. But, you know, so clearly not much has changed. Yeah, I guess whenever I read smoke without fire, I thought effect without cause. And then maybe at the end, I was thinking cause without effect.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot symbolically going on in the song. That is really interesting, and I like your breakdown of the title and also like what the story of the song is saying. I wish, just for the sake of like analysis, that there was a little bit more, like, you know, maybe we could spend more time like breaking it down a little more deeply, but I feel like, I don't know. Would there be another stanza that would make the intent of the song a little more clear? I don't know. I think it's nice to have one of these kind of songs where there's a lot to dig into and we can walk away with different things. I feel like there have been quite a few songs recently that we've done and been like, yeah, the song feels like it's about this. And we just kind of look at each other for a second. It's like, all right, great song, beautiful lyrics, but like we may have cracked the code. not to sound arrogant or anything. You know, but we do often very much agree on a lot of things, and it is nice when we can actually like pull out different things and you know, have some ideas that might be at odds with the other, just to you know, for the variety, the spice in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And a small note, do you know who sings along with him?
I do. And that's why I felt bad. Like we came out the gate like hot talking about like the line about the painted whores. But yeah, it was really cool. M Ward singing and strumming along.
Yeah. The famous singer from She and Him.
Yeah. They couldn't get Zoe to come. They couldn't get Miss Deschanel to make an appearance.
Every time I think about M. Ward, I think of a Childish Gambino lyric where he says, because one of us is famous like she and him.
Damn. Holy shit. Fucking like, shots fired.
I know. And it's not supposed to be like a diss towards M. Ward or anything like that. You know, it's about like, I don't think he's wrong, but right, exactly. Like, I'd have to think about like, wait, which song is it? And like, what is he saying before, or after? Like,
imagine they like met at a party once, and like M. Ward was a massive asshole, and so it's like, oh shit! All right, well, guess what, buddy? You just earned a line in one of my songs.
You just made the list, motherfucker.
He takes out like an ancient scroll and writes in blood, M. Ward. Oh man,
boy. All right, so shall we move to Stray Dog Freedom?
Yeah, because we have to run away, because as soon as our freedom is at stake, that's it, we're out.
I hope that these transitions are just practice for Casadega, because boy, if you could hear some of the outtakes we got right now, they have not been going too hot.
Follow the Instagram account. I'm sure you'll probably hear some of those flubs that let's face it, that I did.
And myself, obviously. don't throw yourself under the bus. Anyway, yeah, Stray Dog Freedom. I'll kick this one off since you did the last two, but
yeah.
You know, I did ask you to, so I guess I don't mean to take charge here or anything. Okay, so you know, I think the title is meant to be, I think, oxymoronic, at least like a little bit of like a, you know, stray dog being seen as a negative and freedom being seen as kind of like a positive, like, it, you know, maybe not oxymoronic, but at least juxtaposed, you know, like two kind of like opposing ideas that you wouldn't necessarily like think of, like the stray dog is free, but is that really a positive thing? You know, so like it gets you thinking. And please, Mr. Englishman, if I used the wrong words there, correct me. But anyway, I probably did.
Nah, you're good.
So I see it as like an outsider looking in kind of thing of looking down on a mangy dog, but at least he's got his freedom, you know, and he can be proud of that, because that's all this dog wants, is that at least at the end of the day, he's free. He's not beholden to anybody, you know, except for whenever he comes around begging for food, etc.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an interesting parallel to the dog, his freedom, and then like that very last stanza. Or sorry, starting from the second verse onward, like, The first verse is all about this dog, and then for seemingly no reason, we shift over to in a more introspective set of lyrics. And I think that if there's a connecting theme across all of the songs of the EP, is maybe a more friction in the relationship of like being a traveling, someone who travels and is always moving around, and both wants to settle down and wants to leave. Like, I'm always packing my bags, even when I want to stay, right? I think that's the friction that's in the dog's life of wanting freedom, but then also that the thing that would rob you of freedom is, you know, comfort, food, love, that kind of thing.
Huh. Well, Jesse... Mm-hmm. You're just wrong. You're just so dumb. You're so dumb. You're so wrong. And honestly, I'm angry that I had to listen to you speak up.
We have all been made dumber for listening to what you have to say. May God have mercy on your soul.
On our souls. Oh God, that is a classic one. Yeah. So obviously I don't feel that way, but I do disagree with you on this one, which is, you know, this is the fun of it.
Huh? Okay. All right.
So I think the entire song Connor is talking about someone else.
I don't think
that he sees himself as the stray dog. I could be wrong, of course. But I do think there is maybe some jealousy in that, because I think Connor has kind of brought that up in other songs of like easy, lucky, free, you know, like she'll probably feel cheap, but I'll just feel free and a little bit empty, you know?
Mm.
But I think he's seeing this certain person, or maybe even a type of person, that just has taken advantage of him, his friends, and their kindness, and then kind of skipped out when they felt like things were maybe getting too personal, or that when they felt like, uh-oh, I've let myself become like vulnerable, or like that I might depend on these people a little bit. And I think what made me think of that is Common Knowledge, which is on Upside Down Mountain. So
yeah.
It starts off with, he's my friend, but he's no friend to me. Ask him why, I'll tell you casually. Backstabbed everyone he trusted, et cetera, et cetera. Says he sees what no one else can see. But then Connor expresses in that last part, like, too, like, if I had half his guts, I'd want it to chase that fatalistic comet. So I saw a parallel here of maybe, like, if he is talking about a specific person, perhaps it is the same person or similar people that have come in, pretended to be his friend, but just leave when I don't know, when things seem to be all right, or when they get scared.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that as well, especially since with those last two lines, why should I treat a traitor like a friend?
Right. Yeah,
that feels like it's in strong support with what you're saying. And then what's the it escapes me right now. I think it was from Salutations / Ruminations. Barbary Coast, where it's like, when all my friends have used me up and left, I know you'll stick around. So like, maybe Connor's running with some folks who are very much fair weather friends that stick around when it's good, and when the going gets tough, they run away, because like, why would I get weighed down by somebody else's problems, regardless of if you took me home, fed me, and gave me pets or whatever.
Right. Yeah. No, I for sure. And like, you know, you think of being this musician that's clearly like made a good life, like well off, and you know, I'm sure he's not struggling for money or anything, and the type of people that could potentially attract, especially, you know, I don't know anything about Connor as a person, but like, if he is willing to give, you know, what kind of people are out there trying to, you know, take advantage, that kind of thing. But yeah, like I said, just kind of like my way of reading it. I was obviously kidding when I said dumb. I think you're so smart.
Wow. That came across really genuinely and not at all sarcastically.
I meant it though. You know?
Yeah. No,
I don't want to let myself feel vulnerable. I just want to take.
Right.
And
then as soon as there's any sort of pushback, you'll just run away. And actually we're going to get to it, but it does, I'll point it out later, but that does remind me of a line in Tourist Trap, which is funny. I think it's the only song in the album that was in the proper order for me, because it was the last song on the EP and alphabetically the last song. So go figure.
Yeah. I kind of wish we could talk about Cartoon Blues last. But I think that would be too out of left field. I think we should go in track order.
Yeah, I get that.
But I have so much more to say on Cartoon Blues than I do about Tourist Trap. But maybe getting ahead of ourselves. I mean, I'm good for Stray Dog Freedom. Are you ready to move on?
Yeah, let's move on to the last song of the album, which is Cartoon. No. if only we could finish. It seems like you've got a lot to say, but maybe we can circle back to it after we finish the whole album.
Perhaps.
Let's jump into to Cartoon Blues, since I did the last two. Do you want to do this one? Take this one as well.
Yeah, sure. I have no fucking clue what's going on in this song. And that's my entire... Those are my notes. Okay, I love this song so, so much. Of all of the songs on this EP, like, this has been a staple of mine for, you know, the past, 12, 13 years kind of thing. Like, it is a friggin' banger. And This is like Brian is saying, like, aw, you like the first day of my life? I don't care. Fuck you. Like, it's such a legit song. I mean, lyrically, it's twisted and psychedelic, and then obviously, like, the music is just it just bangs, you know. Mm. Bluesy and hard, and yeah. But this is a tough one for me to make sense of. I think I spent as much time looking through this one as I did all the other ones combined. But I want to hear what you have to say first, though.
Mm.
But that's my little intro for it.
So this song is weird for me for a couple of reasons. And I think the one reason that it was weird is because getting older, like with a few years of experience after having like first listened to the song, I started realizing some of the references that were being made. So just to give a weird example, like, and the pot turned to powder and soured the mood.
Mm.
Okay, so when I was younger and I had no idea about drugs because I was a good goody two-shoes good boy, I assumed that meant like they smoked all the weed and the pot became ash. It was powder. Oh, we ran out of drugs. All right. And everyone leaves because they're bummed that no one got it's done. It's over. And now I'm realizing that it started out with something pretty soft core like pot, and then cocaine got thrown into the mix and other kind of stuff got like the pot turned you powdered like cocaine.
Interesting. Okay, I still feel the opposite way, but
what was your interpretation of that line?
No, I mean, I still feel the same way, that it's like pot turned to powder, as in it turned to ash and soured the mood. I guess that's the way I still read it, but I think you make a good point that maybe it is that.
Well, okay, so I think that's super interesting, but regardless, the fact that like now I've read that line in a completely different way, and so I kind of got the impression of like, I don't know, like, is this what happens when somebody, you ever just like kind of really think about your life and just know, like, kind of take note of the fact that like things can go crazy very quickly but then go back to normal as quickly? And so it kind of like the whole idea of cartoon blues, of going from like a cartoon character back to a human being, kind of to me reads as like, it's kind of wild how you can be thrust into a completely crazy situation. Like, think about that crazy party last night and all the crazy shit you did. And then you're back at your normal job at Starbucks and you're, oh, I'm just making a latte for this customer. And it's like, you mm-hmm. oscillate between like a wild, strange side of yourself, and then you've got to put on the human face and be a normal person the next day, the next hour, you know?
Yeah.
That's my general interpretation, and I'll just end my initial thoughts by saying I completely agree with you that like this is, you know, for as disturbing and weird and dark as it is, it's also like a beautifully written song. It's so evocative, and I think like if it wasn't for the fact that it really couldn't, I can't think of anywhere you could put this in Casadega, the feel of it is there. It's very mm-hmm. esoteric. It's very,
yeah.
like, we'll talk more about Yeats when we get to Casadega, but like, just a lot. To me, it feels very much like a Yeats, very spiritual, very esoteric kind of poem. But yeah, I want to throw it back to you. So like, what other thoughts did you have? What's tickling your brain and you want to just like dive in more about?
So I don't disagree with you about cartoon blues. I was thinking maybe it was a reference to like tripping or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like the world going messy and unstable. And, but then, you know, you go back and you kind of like come down from that high, kind of turning back into a human in a sense from this cartoon world that you were living in for the past like couple of hours or something like that. I do, you know, just want to point out for maybe people that have listened to the song or maybe haven't like spent as much time in the Bright Eyes universe. But, you know, those first lines talking about the one where the baby died is a reference to Patrick by Prince. And, you know, I think this is Connor kind of discussing his time at a party probably surrounded by people that he wishes he wasn't there with, you know, a bunch of like fake people, basically, you know, a plagiary poet that's just kind of like trying to suss out, like, you know, what is it? What makes you tick? What is it that allows you to bring these creations to life? And he's just kind of like feeding this guy nonsense of like, let me tell you the secret, you know, like very sarcastically. But really the stuff that has my brain in a tizzy are mostly like the choruses, right? Timer in the world, like a failed revolution, a tumor we could not remove, an old friend, a constant, the blues. Following that metaphor, I guess following like line by line. So if you're thinking of time as a tumor, right? You know, like, or what happens to a tumor over time, rather. If time didn't exist, if time stood still, there would be no danger, right, in a tumor. However, it's the progression of time that creates some of the danger of a tumor, because over time it can spread and it can become a very serious, significant illness and cancer, right? If it like metastasizes and spreads and that kind of thing. So I feel like the core thought that Connor is trying to wrestle with is time, which is something that he's discussed some discomfort with back on Fevers and Mirrors too, right? But this idea of time kind of being the enemy, in a sense, I think is a really interesting and hard thing to grasp. So towards the end of the second verse and into the second chorus, right, he starts talking a little bit more about kind of seeing time in this weird way. He's envying the ending from the start. He's watching the horse as it follows the cart. But then also earlier, he mentions in the first verse, I tried walking backwards to get less confused.
Mm.
And all of this, I don't know, all of this kind of signals something to me of like seeing the world in reverse, in a sense of, and I don't know if it's him trying to understand why he's always set his sights in the past or something like that. He is fighting the progression of time forwards. He's fighting the present and future because of some anxiety, because of some fear of time being the enemy. And this is why he ultimately has, you know, what if I walk backwards? Can I relive? Sure, maybe the past wasn't great, but can I relive something that felt more comfortable? I know I've been going on forever, but like, such a weird, trippy song.
I think something that's in support of what you're saying is, why do I envy the ending right from the start? Just get it together to take it apart. So this is going to be a sentiment that's echoed in Tourist Trap when we get to it. But I think that line about walking backwards is like maybe this weird like mental gymnastics of like, I know that time needs to move forward and that everything is going to end. But why do I either, in a weird paradox, like I don't want it to get to the end, but all I can do is think about the ending. So in a weird logic trap, like what if I walk backwards? What if I look at this backwards? So I intend on looking at it straight from the ending, but if I do it backwards, will that flip things back around so that I can just like live in the moment and let time take its natural course without worrying about it? There does seem to be so much anxiety about the future and about like the inevitability of things like sadness and just things ending. Like calling the blues a tumor is interesting. I don't know. I mean, I think that's what that line is trying to say, right? Like it's both a tumor, an old friend, and a constant. Like it seems like he's weirdly trying to like justify his relationship with negativity when I'm maybe part of the problem is accepting negativity as inevitable instead of something he could do things about, and like do getting into this weird logic trap of, you know, not saying it's an easy thing to just be like, yeah, don't be sad, because we've all seen those jokes about like, hey, I'm really bummed out. Well, feel better. Great. Yeah, that totally works. Thanks, dude. But also completely ignoring the fact that like you do have some agency in how you feel, though often it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you've helped me, as always, help me kind of think through kind of these loose, sporadic, very random ideas that I have that I can never turn into a compelling narrative. But yeah, like to wrap up my thoughts, just the idea of Connor fighting the flow of time, trying to find any way to justify the fact that the future breeds nothing but anxiety, fear, and potentially negativity for him, wanting to find a way to move backwards, but at the same time coming to terms with the fact that that may not be possible. And I don't think that this is the song where he explores that second part. I think he's just kind of thinking more about like, where am I? How do I feel? Reflecting on that kind of, on that situation.
There was so much interesting stuff to pull apart here. And I think that there's still so much mystery surrounding a lot of like what is being said and why, that it lets the conversation continue. And I think that the song really does a good job of giving us enough interesting stuff to think about while also just being a fun song to listen to. However, I think we should probably after this, we should head into town, because I think there's like a Conor Oberst memorabilia shop that we should check out. And all of the items are really, really overpriced, but like, gotta say, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. So some people might call it a tourist trap, but I think it sounds like a fun time. That's gonna get cut too, isn't it? Tourist trap. I'll kick this one off. We're
keeping that entire thing in.
I would be disappointed if we didn't. So I think that it's pretty lucky that this song alphabetically is the last one in the EP, because while I don't think that there's a story that runs through the whole of the album, I do think that there are some like themes and motifs that Tourist Trap really sums up well. And that is sort of the anxiety of having to settle down after being on an adventure, essentially. The hero's journey cycle of storytelling usually ends with like, after a story is told, the hero, after in most cases being successful in whatever they went to do, comes back home only to find that the place that they called home is too small for them now. They've seen too much, they've done too much, and their home and themselves, they've changed too much. Their home has changed too much. They don't fit in anymore. So yeah, I do get the impression that like this song is about the frustrations of sort of being more worldly, or traveling more, or just, you know, going outside of your hometown, coming back and realizing that like this is not really home anymore. Or at least it wasn't the place that I left. And I'm certainly not the person who left that place.
100%. This song frustrates me a little bit just because of that. Like, we've talked about it before on other albums, that like hangover from Cartoon Blues into this kind of like kind of sleepy track. I mean, obviously, if you've been listening to Out of Order, you don't get, maybe no. Haven't gotten that same experience. But, you know, so like sometimes it's like, this song doesn't really hit as much. I don't know if this is a slight against it, but I get big Toy Story vibes from it. does that make sense? Do you agree with me on that?
Do you agree? Are you saying, are you referring to like, who does the score? Is it Andy Newman?
Randy
Newman.
I'm not like him specifically, but I feel like if this song was in Toy Story 3, I wouldn't have been too surprised, you know?
Yeah, like the idea of like
Andy growing up, and you know, like he's too big for his toys now, and yeah, I don't, like I said, I don't know if that's a slight against it, but you know, big Toy Story aesthetic to it. But also, you're right, like musically too. I feel like if Randy Newman was singing this.
can we get it? Can we do like a petition to have Randy Newman do a cover of Tourist Trap?
He's not the road. I know. So, but I don't think it's just Connor being too big for the town, but I think it's also, look what they've done to our hometown. It, you know, it reminds me of kind of what they were talking on Read Music Speak Spanish for De Supercitos. The song Greater Omaha, right? And the De Supercitos album predates this. It was 2002, whereas this came out in 2007. But I just want to highlight a couple of the lyrics. So, out west, they're moving dirt to make a Greater Omaha. Another franchise sold, so there are even more restaurants per capita. And, you know, et cetera, throughout the song. So I think he's saying similar things here, where like he leaves and he comes back, and this isn't the Omaha he knew. Not only to your point that he's grown, he's changed, he's gained a newfound appreciation for culture and life outside of Omaha, but also the people back home have changed this kind of vision that he's had of his hometown. They've turned it into this kind of any town USA, where it used to have some uniqueness, some character to him before.
Yeah, I think unfortunately we can probably speak to that too, right? I don't know how you feel necessarily, but I feel like that kind of happens or has happened everywhere to an extent. Like, I know in like our hometown, things have been like built up so much that it's not recognizable from what it was like 10 or 20 years ago. And yeah, it can be really shocking if you leave for a while, then you come back and find that, you know, these basically strangers come and warp your environment behind your back in many ways. Like, as you were pointing out with those lyrics, like, it's almost like an outside force shaping, you know, the culture of your hometown. And just like with the knowledge that that album came out so much earlier than either of us really anticipated, I can definitely see like this being a more mellowed reflection on how that affects your hometown and what it does to you, more less to do with the like material reality of the situation, like, you know, the fact that your hometown is becoming more commercialized and built up in ways that you don't like, but more of the emotional side of it, like coming home and realizing you're not home. I definitely see like the parallels between this and Read Music Speak Spanish.
Yeah, oh, definitely. That's going to be an interesting one. Should we finish the Bright Eyes discography and end up doing some of that? Because, you know, we've avoided a little bit of political. You know, we've let some of it out. But when we get into De Supercitos, that'll be fun. As cheesy, I will say, as cheesy as some of the songs were on like Paola, you know, I there is something funny about hearing protest music from like Bright Eyes, not Bright Eyes, obviously, but like Connor and the crew. But like at the same time, that'll be like fun to kind of discuss. I feel like you maybe don't even have to go in song for song on that, but like overall, maybe yeah. What's going on.
That would be cool if folks would let us know, like, is that something you'd be interested in and see, like doing a mini-sode, like not necessarily going like through an album, but maybe like just covering the band and pointing out a few things that we notice or a few songs that we like, or maybe even dislike. That might be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. Good point. Anyway, friend, I mean, that's it. We've reached a conclusion.
It's over. It's all. It's all.
we just began. But I guess it's about time we the album finally gave us back, but I don't think I'll unpack.
I was gonna say that maybe if we kind of start speaking backwards, maybe we'll end up back at the start again.
Yeah. I mean, our let's get to the next song, which is Cartoon Blues, and we just start doing a review. We just start going back. We cover all the songs again in reverse order.
Oh boy. Oh god. I don't think I have the stamina for that.
I don't think our audience would have the patience.
Well, I don't think that they necessarily want to hear us speak for that long. I mean, the absolute last thing though, I will say on Tourist Trap, really cool liner note. One, someone named Mike Koikendall, is listed as the Whistler, along with percussive guitar, and Clint Wheeler is credited for cowboy boots. So, you know, I love that they added those things in there.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. That's fun. I didn't know that.
Well, because I don't think anyone wants us to talk all the way back through the entire album again. I mean, maybe some of you masochists do, but for the majority of you, this seems like a good time, to wrap up. So I mean, this is a fun EP. I like it more than I thought I did. I, you know, I listened, obviously, like Four Winds, I generally get my fix of that on Casadega. Reinvent the Wheel is great, and of course I love Cartoon Blues, but you know, there is 9 out of 10, a little something for everybody on it. And I just can't wait for Casadega.
Yeah, nor can I. And honestly, I was surprised going back to I remember when we did a previous EP, it felt really short because we had to cut out, like, I think two singles that ended up being on the album. So it felt really short. But the fact that there was only one single on here made it seem like this felt like a mini album, like almost, I don't know, like a good appetizer, not like finger foods, like just a good little appetizer plate, I think.
Yeah. This EP definitely has like big meaty claws.
I was going to say that this is the Bloomin' Onion. This is the Bloomin' Onion of Bright Eyes. But
the Bloomin' Onion. Your big, meaty claws.
Meaty claws.
Oh, boy. Anyway, any final thoughts for the kids at home?
No, I think I'm just going to echo what you said previously. I'm really looking forward to diving into Casadega. I can't wait to share that episode with all of our listeners.
That could be one that'll end up 3 hours
long. Oh yeah. That could be like, a second place, right after Fevers and Mirrors. Right? Our Casadega.
Oh god.
But hey, you know, if the people like the multi-part episodes, like, you're probably going to have a big chunky episode coming down the pipeline, so be ready for it. Well, I think it's about time we went upstairs and checked up on the Oberst and make sure, like, that smoke is put out and everything's okay up there.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I got to do some laundry as well, so I might have to run up there real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Soiled my pants after Cartoon Blues.
Hey, thanks for giving us a listen. If you'd like to support what we do here at Connor's Basement, you can support us over at patreon.com/Connor's Basement, just like these fine folks at our highest tier, Goldie and Chris's mom. Thanks so much for listening.